you're going to need to get really, really good at bringing your client in and then great at keeping them. Or are you going to start diversifying? Are you going to start offering different options in terms of your service modeling in order to be able to either grab a new market or retain some of your existing market that might move? Are you going to have price reductions and then create some ancillary income streams to top back up your income that's coming through? Businesses have got to become businesses, not real estate agencies.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. Each episode, we bring you the best minds in business and real estate to help you list more, sell more, and elevate your results. To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching, and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Elevate podcast, where we delve into some of the best minds in the industry for the very best tips and strategies in real estate and business today. I'm Samantha McLean, editor of Elite Agent and host of this week's show. My guest this week is Fiona Blaney from Real Plus. Fiona and I caught up ahead of ARPM this year to really get to the nitty-gritty of the issues facing property management businesses right now. In this podcast, you're going to hear Fiona talk about the customer of 2025 and what they'll be looking for, and the rise of four different property management models, from traditional full service to online self-service models. Fiona also explains why disruption is a yesterday term and why you more need to be thinking about the choices you'll provide consumers in the future. And while you're thinking about choices, you'll also need to choose the types of services and fee structures your business will provide. We also talk through the possibilities of differentiation, diversification, and what could be improved in leadership in property management right now. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and if you do, please share it with your industry colleagues, and of course, hit that iTunes subscribe button. For show notes and links to this episode, please visit our website, eliteagent.com/elevate. This episode is brought to you by Connect Now, who can help you to provide a greater level of service to your clients by sorting their home moving needs quickly and easily. Find out more about becoming a Connect Now partner by emailing partnersupport@connectnow.com.au. That's it from me. On with the show. I hope you enjoy the episode.
So welcome to the podcast, Fiona Blaney.
Thanks for having me, Sam McLean.
It is super to catch up again. The last time I saw you was at the Real Ideas Prize judging, where you and I were both pretending to be Judge Judy of sorts.
Oh, 100%. I was Naomi Simpson.
Yeah.
Thank
and
you.
I was Janine.
Yes.
The survivor.
And was that was, honestly, that was one of my, up there with one of my all-time favourite things that we've done. It was really, really good fun.
Yeah. So what did you think of some of the ideas?
Look, I'm always a little bit controversial with my statements, so let's not stop today. I think that the interesting thing for me was I sat back and I thought, look, some really good ideas coming through. My controversial part is that I felt that in the main, most ideas were coming through around getting a industry player to change something that is already a product that's out there, right? So to improve an existing concept. And with that, what's my controversial bit? The bit is that I think we all just keep sitting back and waiting for the industry suppliers to give us the products or the solutions that we can put in our businesses by saying, okay, here you go, here's cookie cutter for real estate. When really most of the stuff, as we found even when we did Transform and the ideas, the tech ideas, software ideas in that, was that most of the ideas are actually out there being used in other industries already. So I think it's more about now going out there, finding your base solution, and then working out what you want to add into it, what other corresponding complementary software ideas, apps, et cetera, that are already out there in other spaces. Gosh, you go into the app store and how many are there, and putting those in. And I think that's what I felt wasn't what it was missing or anything from the program, but it was more my observation of the industry as a result of being part of Real Ideas.
Yeah, it was interesting because I found that everyone's minds was on some sort of cost saving. Like, you know, everyone's trying to rationalize their cost bases.
Yes.
But I think that there are very limited ideas out there, and I would really love to hear a few of them, on how you could actually offer premium services and improve margin rather than always thinking about, oh, I've got to cut my cost base.
Yeah. And with that, I think there were some veiled attempts at improving the customer experience without a whole gamut of how can we completely listen to the customer? What do they want? And perhaps that's in some of these new models even that we'll get to. But it's around what is the customer actually wanting, the customer of 2020, 2025, not the customer of 2012?
Yeah, well, exactly, because the customer that we're trying to appeal to now really is probably someone like my daughter Amy, who's 17. Like, you know, we need to be building our businesses for when she's 25 and wanting to rent a property and
100%. That's a, you know, that cliche, future-proof.
And you and I both know she's a tough customer.
She is. She's a tough few things.
So let's talk about some of these new property management models, because in your consulting business, you're seeing quite a few different things pop up. Like the ground is shaking in PM with prop tech and things like that. You know, technology companies that are wanting a slice of the pie. And, you know, we've talked before and you've seen four different business models emerging amongst your clients. So do you mind taking us through what they are?
No, sure.
And what they do?
Look, they're quite detailed, but I suppose as a snapshot for listeners, there are four main ones, if I can call it that. So if you can visualise for a moment, four verticals. The initial vertical, if I'm moving right to left, is how I look at it. The initial vertical is, that's the vertical that most people listening are playing in right now. It's the traditional real estate vertical. So traditional property management inside a real estate office. And when I say use the word traditional, I simply mean the standard kind of offering as we know it today, albeit with some, you know, pent up bells and whistles. We're doing full gamut services. Typically, we're charging an array of different fee structures and so forth. But whatever your fee structure is, whatever your service offering is, it kind of sits in that side, that traditional, give me your property, I'll manage it as your property manager, lease it, look after it and return it back to you. Maybe we'll sell it. The second model then, as we move through, and you'll see as we move through, we're moving through a niche, we're moving through boutique, we're moving into tech. So that second model is a franchise style boutique micro property management offering. And if I can use this as an example to illustrate it, let's say that Real Plus was to turn around tomorrow and have Real Plus property management. And we were to power a whole gamut of property managers across Australia who had their 50, 80, 100, maybe 150, they're operating from their dining room table at home under the Real Plus property management brand. And they are Real Plus property management, Sydney West, Sydney East, you know, Brisbane North, and so forth. And so that's a franchise style model. The third model and the fourth model are somewhat intertwined. The third model, I'll call it the landlord self-serve model. So it's purely tech software based, is an online model whereby I can utilize technology by which to manage my own property. So if you know, just what do we go to the likes of, say, Property Tree, Property Me, pretend for a minute now that they are an online offering direct to client and a landlord can go in, put a property on there and self-manage it. And of course, then that same client may then be able to take advantage of putting their property online on realestate.com.au, et cetera, through that vertical. The fourth one is then an online offering, albeit I can then select to have someone do a fee-for-service role. So I'm a client, I manage my own property, but hey, I don't want to lease it, or I don't want to do the routine, or you know what, I'm away when the lease renewal needs to be done or the rent review, or I'm having trouble and I need somebody to represent me at tribunal, or the tenant's vacating and I really would prefer not to enter into the vacate inspection or, yeah, or heaven help do that ingoing,
or clean it,
clean
yeah,
it, whatever.
Yeah.
So then I can pay a business that is attached, you know, or becomes an affiliate of that online model. And of course, there are businesses that are running the online model and the fee for service in conjunction with each other. And so you've got those four models typically now for the client to choose from. So, you know, the framework I'm saying to clients out there now that we're working with the agencies themselves, I'm saying disruption was a yesterday term, okay, in the context of how we use disruption in real estate. And so that's yesterday's term. Today's term is choice. And not only do I have choice inside that traditional vertical around First National, you know, Rain and Horn, Century 21, Ray White, Independence, et cetera, but I also have choice around, well, do I even go traditional? Do I go be too niche someone at home? Or do I go online self-serve, or do I go online self-serve and if I need something, I'll ask for a fee-for-service? And so clients are now not comparing you just in your vertical. They're comparing the four verticals first, and then they're comparing everybody inside those verticals. So maybe it's getting a bit more confusing for the consumer as well in some ways, but they have got some serious choice and we have to be ready for that.
Yeah, actually, you just reminded me, I think, it happened a couple of years ago listening to Peter Knight from the UK.
Oh, yes.
Came out. And do you remember he kind of floated this idea a couple of years ago for people that were at ARPM, thinking about, you know, like, how do I get people in on the ground level with a basic service and then kind of upsell. Like, there was a lot of places in the UK doing that. Do you think that is going to become a bit more of a trend?
Oh, look, absolutely. And as you know, I've known Pete for years with the work that I did with him over there. And even in my own time working in real estate in the UK back in 99 and 2000, Sam, right? Yeah. The model there very simply is let my property, then if I want you to manage it, I'll get you to manage it. And they already had a whole range of then fee for services with inside this management criteria, if you like, or option. And so they've been doing that model over there for forever, you know, really. Then when you come over here, is it going to increase here? Absolutely, because consumers want choice. I don't want you to tell me you have to have this, because as an adult, I say, well, really? Do I? And then I look around, and if there are no other options for me, then I assume that, well, that must be what I have to do. But now businesses outside of real estate and even real estate practitioners are breaking that thought and starting other businesses that allow the consumers to say, you know what, actually, I don't need to do that. I do have other options, and which one would suit better for me and my own personal circumstances. And so, yeah, 100%, it's there.
So at the moment, we've got these different business models emerging mm-hmm. to cope with the consumer who wants choice mm-hmm. and who also wants the best service they've ever had in their lives. Like, you know, so we keep hearing this stuff about customer experience and making sure that the customer is wowed every single time. And over here, we're kind of looking at models where perhaps there is a lot of pressure on fees. Mm. How do you balance the two of those things?
It's a really, really good question. I suppose my first comment would be that I question, does a client really want this?
Or are we talking Uber here?
Like, yeah, you know, they, like, do
if,
they want?
If I choose Uber Select, I expect a Toyota Corolla.
That's right. But have we actually set the client up? Have we set the consumer's expectation up so greatly in the last 20 years that of course they expect this superior service because we've been telling them that that's what we do, but we yeah. don't actually do it because for the dollars that we're getting, it's not even possible because of the one income stream, your revenue stream model that we've had. And so I actually question, does a client really expect what we have suggested or what we believe that they expect? I don't think that they do. I think that perhaps they expect more because we've told them they don't have any choice.
Mm. Or if you're going to pay me 10% instead of 4%, then I'm going to expect more, obviously. But
correct. But we've had a price war for that whole time. When I first started in real estate in 92, I'm sound like old lady now, we were charging 7% then. And this was before it was deregulated or around that time. And we really have, that's still, you know, New South Wales, that's still been the standard modelling. And so, yes, rents have increased and, you know, we've had some other ancillary fees come in and so forth. But, you know, fundamentally, it hasn't changed. And so people have been competing out there on price, which is completely fine. There's great price modelling. If I can do it at 4%, go for it. And you're happy with that and you're making a good business proposition for that, do it. I'm not here about contesting whether or not you should charge 4 or 44. What I'm suggesting is that we have all been competing on the wrong thing. We've been in the red ocean using the blue ocean strategy concept. We're in a red ocean and we've not really delineated between our service offerings. And so we've been competing on fee and now we're kind of annoyed at that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I do notice that there is not a lot of differentiation. I mean, obviously the good businesses, and we know who they are, they do differentiate themselves. Mm-hmm. But it's very hard, you know, when you've got every single property management business saying the same things and there is no real differentiation in terms of the service that's offered.
Last night when I got home, stuck in my gate on my front fence was the letterbox drop magazines, right? You know, you get them rolled up and they drop the rolled together. Two magazines, the Coles magazine and the Woolworths magazine. And I pulled out those two magazines, Sam, and I put them next to each other because I was thinking about differentiation. And I thought, how does Coles and Woolworths, who essentially offer the same things, how do they differentiate? And I looked at those magazines, and I tell you what they do. They do similar things to what two offices that are standing next to each other with a similar offering, because let's face it, we all have a deli, we all sell hot chickens, we all sell fruit and veg, right? You get my drift. We all do routines, we all do lease renewals, we all do maintenance.
Milk's always at the back.
Milk's always at the back, get the people through, kids annoying chocolate at the front. Yep. And what do? They're differentiating themselves on price. They're differentiating themselves on that week's special, on the feature, you know, on Coles Minis, you know, or Earn and Learn stickers, you know, from Woolies. And so that's what we're doing. And, you know, I wonder, Sam, as I thought about that last night, I wonder, are these businesses really doing anything different? You know, does the two offices next to each other really fundamentally do anything different? Or is one bigger simply because they've been better at promoting, better at communicating what they're doing, better at understanding the benefit, not of using them just necessarily, but of using a real estate agent in the first place? Have they been able to sell that? Have they been able to engage with the hearts, with the relationship, with the children on the free banana on the way in, you know? Yeah. So I think that that's really a point of interest as we move through, because in those four segments, you're going to need to get really, really good at bringing your client in and then great at keeping them. Do you go back to Woolies or do you go back to Coles? What's your preference? Most people have a preference. Do you ship across to Aldi to get something? So are you going to be really, really good at that? Or are you going to start diversifying? Are you going to start offering different options in terms of your service modeling in order to be able to either grab a new market or retain some of your existing market that might move? Are you going to have price reductions and then create some ancillary income streams to top back up your income that's coming through, or the loss of income, should I say, because you've now put bananas on at a dollar? There's every reason in the world why when you go to BP that the guy at the front counter tries to sell you two packets of chewing gum or two cans of Coke or whatever.
For what is,
you know, I'm like, how can this be? How is it cheaper for me to buy two than it is to buy one? You know, metaphorically. And so where are you going to sit? And businesses have got to become businesses, not real estate agencies.
Yeah, I mean, there it is. I can remember just to what you're saying there. Back in my old telco days, I worked for Telstra and Optus and British Telecom, and often my friends would say to me, which one's the best? And, you know, we all sort of have wires in the ground. We all had more or less the same service offerings, even at the same price points. But, you know, my answer then, it was probably the same answer as it would be now, work with who you like working with. That's going to make your life so much easier at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's a really interesting statement, actually, when you reflect that on property management. And one of the things that a lot of property management businesses are scared about is their people moving. So if I tap into that statement, work with people that you like working with, perhaps one of the challenges that businesses have is around ensuring that the client likes working with the business, not just the human that they're interacting with. So how do we create personalities for the business? Mm. How does the client engage with the business, not just their property manager?
Yeah, and that's typical Generation Z. You know, they'll want to work with businesses that speak to them, that are in line with their own beliefs, values.
Absolutely.
Yeah, interesting. So there's obviously heaps going on in property management at the moment.
Massive.
You've got the challenge of putting together the ARPM program again this year, and you always do a fantastic job on that. There's always a very diverse bunch of speakers, and this year is no exception. So how are you preparing for the delegates who come along to ARPM to meet all of these challenges? What will they hear?
Well, I think one of the things with the ARPM program, and thanks to the kudos, because we spend, I cannot even tell you how many hours are spent working out this program. In fact, we're already starting on the 2020 program. I've already been starting on that for the last 3 months, right?
Wow, yeah.
And so what we do at ARPM is I want to break your brain. When you're sitting in that room, I want you to be in an environment where your thinking is challenged on every level. And I'll say that sometimes people will say to me, God, that, you know, the content of that particular session, that was pitched quite high. And I say, yeah, because the industry needs to come higher, right? Yeah. There's no point in me pitching to what you already know. We need to pitch you to what's coming. And so that's really what we're doing. We are looking at, of course, there's all the buzzwords, okay, like CX, you know, customer experience and, yeah, and you know, choice, not disruption. But what we've done this year is we've got a really awesome collaboration, if you like, on the business-based speakers, as always. We've got the traditional industry practitioners. We've got the micro-franchise practitioner. And we've got the online self-serve and the online self-serve with fee-for-service practitioner. Mm-hmm. So we're taking in the full gamut of property management, of investor management as it sits today in the market. So, you know, we've got Mark Trowell from Yabonza who's speaking, is in the online self-serve clientele there. You know, we're going down this micro franchise property management model offerings there. And then obviously over in the traditional modelings, we've got some of the biggest agencies in the country that are coming to talk. But also, when I say biggest agencies, I'm talking highly performing agencies. So that's just not about how big is my rent roll.
Yeah.
Right? That's about how well is my business performing? What are we doing well? How are we changing? What have we adapted? So I'm super excited about that. We've got one business who's actually diversified and now has three different companies running. So you'll know them in the property management space, but we know them through their diversification into online offering and then also in investor services offering. So they're getting real smart around where's property management going for them in the traditional model and how do we jump into these other two? So that's super cool. And businesses and, of course, transitioning their people, because the property managers are all going to come on the ride. It's all good for us to say, oh, we're going to be off doing all these weird and wonderful things and the market's changing, but what are you going to do for a job? So we want to help transition you as a professional into that new role as well. And then we've got some of our pro business speakers are really, really cool around creativity, innovation. You know, how can we actually help people think while you're in the thick of it? How do you think about getting out of the thick of it and what does that look like for you?
Yeah, well, we found during Transform this year, like the whole thinking piece is actually
huge.
Is huge, because if you can't give yourself the time and space to think about your business and your role in that business, then, you know, it's really, really hard to see these things coming.
Absolutely.
And they're not even coming now. They're here.
They're here. And, you know, I think one of the other things which we perhaps overlook quite a lot is that you're in a room. You're in that energetic space for 2 days. You are with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of industry professionals from around the country. There's loads of breakouts. There's loads of, in terms of breakout time, be that morning tea, lunch, afternoon tea, the networking party afterwards, to the people that are sitting all around you to network, not just with one or two people, but to network literally if your heart desires with hundreds and find out what they're all doing as well as the, you know, 25 speakers that are up on the stage sharing their stories with you too.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing. And do you know what? It was exactly 12 months ago that we kicked off the Leadership Diaries with one of your ARPM speakers, Joanna Ferrari.
Oh, I love Joanna. She's a good lady.
Who is amazing. There was a couple of quotes from her podcast that still stick with me, particularly the one where she said, "Everything is as it should be and it serves me." So no matter whether you're going through hell or whether you're going through a good time or whatever, you've got to remember. And, you know, that's something that stuck with me for a year. And with Joanna, we kicked off the Leadership Diaries.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's only fitting that we continue the ARPM tradition with you today.
That's fine. Yep.
Is that
go for
right?
It.
All so right. I know you're not prepared for this in any way, shape or form, but let's go. So, Fiona, what was your first job and what did it teach you?
Oh, my first job. My first job was as a, well, I don't know if it's politically correct to call it a checkout chick, but that's what we used to call it back in the day. Checkout chick at Woolworths, I remember at Top Right. What did it teach me? It taught me consistency. It taught me dedication. It taught me time management. It taught me how to get changed on the back of the bus on the way from school to Woolies.
And that's something that served you well backstage and all sorts of places. Isn't
unbelievable.
It?
I can change a top without anybody realizing, put my skirt and stockings on and off I go. And I think it also taught me, really, that was probably my first foray into meeting people, dealing with an older employer, you know, those sorts of things. And my parents were pretty strict on the whole saving of cash and that value. So I think that work ethic and value and communication and energy and, yeah, lots of things, actually. I've never thought about that for a long time.
It's amazing, isn't it? I know you're going to love this next question.
Okay.
What does the first hour of your day look like? Are you a 5 a.m. clubber?
Absolutely not. If I'm up at 5 a.m., Sam, I've got to tell you, it's because I'm changing a wet sheet and it ain't my sheet. You know, I've got three kids now. The eldest is 7 in a couple of weeks and the youngest is 16 months. So I don't prescribe to the 5 a.m. club. What I mean by that is metaphorically, the whole notion of get up at 5 a.m. and drink my green juice and so forth, that's not a part of my life at the moment. Certainly have I done that in the past, got up early on certain days and gone to the gym and so forth? Yes. But for me, the first hour of my day atypically looks like being present with my kids. I'm a mum and I love being a mum in that first hour, albeit don't like the children being there. No. Getting three kids ready for school is my favourite. 5 a.m. is probably the night before. But, yeah, it's being with the kids, I think, and that is a challenge, I've got to admit, in terms of the whole notion of, you know, getting into the right mindset for the day. And I'm still working that out, you know, 7 years later.
Can you name someone that has had a tremendous impact on you as a leader?
I would say two people that come to my mind instantly. The first one is a lady called Christine Michael, and she'll probably be very surprised to hear me say her name on this, because she taught me to employ people for the strengths that they can bring to my weaknesses. In other words, when I'm employing people in my business, I don't attempt to become anything that I'm not. I don't attempt to become anything that I should be that doesn't come really innately naturally to me. And instead I employ the people around where those innate natural abilities shine through for them. And then as a result, what I've then subsequently found over the years is that then allows me to get totally into flow and I can do more, be more, make more, provide more, give more than what I will if I'm, you know, struggling to get my diary management right. It's just not what I enjoy. And obviously that comes with time and the financial ability to do that. The second person is Bernie Bulger. And Bernie was and still remains my first and most prolific mentor. I've been with her since... She's probably my longest relationship, really, Bernie. But she came to me and I think that I found her through the McCarthy mentoring group. When I first met her, it's like a blind date. And I literally got, you know, I got suited and booted and I was so pumped to meet this mentor. I thought, who is this woman? She must be incredible. We joke now because when I met her, she was like something in Byron Bay whimsical kind of, you know, tree of life sort of style attire. And I was like, who the hell is this? And so what she taught me is she taught me that it's wonderful to be you, to work out who you are, to remain true to that person, to be your authentic you every day of the week. And when you do that, you will ultimately be the success that you're meant to be.
Is there anyone you're learning from right now or a particular book that you're reading at the moment that you found really helpful?
I think right now I'm actually learning from me. And it might sound a little bit of a bizarre statement, because I'm not reading the book I've written on leadership or anything like that, but I'm actually stopping for a minute and I'm listening to myself and I'm having some really tough conversations with myself about who I am, not who I was, but who I am now. Mm. I was chatting with Chris Hanley the other day and he said, I remember when I first met you, you know, you used to run a lot. You know, 5 a.m. up running, marathoning, what have you. And I've kind of had a bit of a chuckle because it's actually not who I am right now and that's okay. So instead of attempting to be who I was, I'm opening the door on the next chapter of my life and I'm sitting down, I'm having conversations with myself, some pretty tough ones, some interesting ones, some thought-provoking ones. I'm journaling quite a bit about what that looks like. I'm sharing that with a few people for them to give me their feedback on it. And I'm also learning from my team because I'm listening to what they're not saying as well as what they are saying. And I'm kind of combining all of that together to see what is our next step.
In the journey.
In the journey.
In the journey.
In the journey.
Okay, so where do great ideas in your business come from? How do you come up, because, you know, like you've got an amazing business there in Real Plus. Well, how do you come up with great ideas, and how do you choose which ones get implemented or executed and which ones go in the trash can?
I come up with a new idea every day, multiple times a day. My brain just works like that. I don't know why, it just does. I'm not the person to execute on them. And sometimes, and I learned this from Multipliers, Liz Wiseman is a great book for anybody in leadership context, the best leadership book I've ever read, or YouTube it if you want to, or get the Brody's notes. But what I learned was that not every idea should be shared out loud, because as a leader, people think that that idea is then about to be put into place. So you have to kind of corral that and share your ideas in the right space. I have learnt to refocus my idea creation at the moment with people that I am coaching, consulting and mentoring, so that I'm utilizing that creativity with them rather than just with myself. Otherwise, my ideas would become all encompassing and we would do nothing. And how do I choose which ones? I sit down and I look at what does our industry need, and are we the ones to actually provide it? Will it serve our next 4-year goal? And if it won't, then it doesn't get in. Which is hard, because I think I come up, I own more URLs, Sam, than I care to think about, and I register business names like people have breakfast.
Yeah, I know, but what you just said there is actually, I think, amazing advice for real estate businesses, you know, about thinking about what your 4-year plan is and then, you know, weeding out ideas based on whether or not it's going to get you to that point rather than, you know, than trying to implement everything. I mean, I love a shiny object when I see one too.
Too many shiny objects, right?
You know it. And it's hard to actually pull back, which is kind of why I asked you that question.
Yeah.
Because I know that there's a lot of people out there that can probably relate to that as well. Oh, this is a good one for you too.
Okay.
Oh, my God, here we go. Favorite question to ask someone in a job interview, and what does it tell you about the person?
If I'm interviewing someone, it's always quite interesting when people watch me interview, I think, because the very first question is I say, so who's Sam? And they say, what do you mean? I say, well, who are you? I don't know who you are. Tell me who you are. Where do you want me to start? Wherever you want.
I'd start with I am Sam.
I am Sam. Good name for a movie, right?
Sam, I am. Yeah.
So, and then I'll say, so tell me about that. I want them to talk about them. I want to hear what they start with. Do they start with the robotic nature of the allocation of them for the role that they're in? Do they attempt to sell me, or do they just talk to me about their family and where they live? And I'll have people that will start that answer that with, oh, I'm Fiona. I grew up in Ryde, you know, in Putney there. And I used to live with mum and dad. Oh yeah. What do mum and dad do? Yeah. I just want to know them, because in my organization, for them to fit in my organization, we need to know who they are, because we're really tight knit. And, you know, one of our values is passion, transparency and quality relationships. And so if I don't know you, and you're not ready to share that with me, or when I know you, I work out you're probably not going to fit in amongst the craziness that can be our office, then it won't matter what skill set you have, it won't work. So that's, I want to know you first. I just ask a really open-ended question and then sit back.
Yeah, no, I reckon that's a good one. What advice would you give, and this would happen in property management all the time with people stepping into leadership roles from, you know, working with a group of people, but what advice would you give someone going into a leadership position for the first time?
People become leaders because people want to follow them, okay? So you could have been a leader your entire life, but when you go into a formal leadership position comes with an incredible level of responsibility that you cannot understand until you are in it. It's like my sister-in-law had her first baby 2 days ago and we were texting, and one of the things I wrote to her was I just wrote one sentence, welcome to motherhood, because she's having a few things that were going on. And she wrote back, it was 48 hours she'd been technically a mother. And she wrote back to me and she said, it's been 48 hours and I'm already starting to get it. Mm. And if you knew my sister-in-law, for her to say that is very poignant. And I think that when you step into a leadership role, 48 hours, you get it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
because it's not about you anymore.
It's not about you. And when I draw a hierarchy, really a traditional hierarchical pyramid model should be turned upside down, because that's where it sits. You are underneath your team holding them up. And being a great leader is not about you. It's about what you produce through the people that you have around you. So my greatest advice would be understand why you want to be a leader, because in property management, I think a lot of people want to be leaders, A, because of tenure, and they think it's their right, that they've earned it because of time, rather than I want to help people. I want to help people do more, be more, improve more. I want to help support, drive, and nurture humans. And, you know, you and I have had so many conversations around the people piece, and it's the most challenging piece in a business.
What does leadership at home look like?
Yeah, turn it on its head and I'm running the joint. leadership at home, oh, you know what? Again, I think that that's one of those doors around what's the stage of life that I'm walking into, what's everybody's skill set, not expecting people to do and be who they are not innately, not expecting from my team more than that which they are capable of. And that includes myself, my husband and my kids. So leadership at home is actually about just working together to get the best out of each other, to get the end result that we're looking for, to ask for help when you need it, even though you're technically the leader of certain elements of your house, right? And being bold enough to tell the other leader when they're not leading their part of the house well enough. But yeah, look, there's no burning of bras at my place. I'm in the kitchen. I'm wearing my bra nice and firmly tight, and I'm probably the chief cook and bottle washer for the kids. But does that mean that my husband doesn't pull his own weight in the appropriate areas? Absolutely he does. But you know, and funnily enough, we have mini board meetings. Like this weekend, we are literally having, I'll jokingly call it a board meeting today. Kids are going off to mum and dad for a couple of hours. It's not about us getting time together. It's literally planning time.
Yeah.
Because we're sitting down this weekend and we're looking at what's the diary look like for the next 6 months? How are things shaping up in terms of time, effort, reward for the kids, for us, for who needs to be where, and helping both my husband and I also get out of our lives what we are both wanting to do. P.S. There's no problem at the moment. This is just a regular check-in that we have.
Yeah, actually, it sounds like a good idea. Might try it myself.
Yeah, family board meeting.
Absolutely.
I'm the chairman of the board, of course.
Me too.
He's probably the treasurer.
Yeah, he is. Okay, so what's the worst advice you've ever heard given to someone in the industry? And you must have heard a lot of bad advice over the years.
I'm not going to give you a sentence, but I will give you a sentiment. And the sentiment is GCI. I hate it. I loathe the term GCI as it is currently used, because the one thing I'm constantly heard people getting asked about is about their GCI. What GCI do you want? What GCI are you chasing? I've got this GCI. This person's got this GCI. The worst advice is to attempt to get to a certain level of GCI just because it seems to be a good number, right? Or it's attainable from other people in the industry. Because what people should be saying is, what do you want to do for your life?
Hmm.
What amount of remuneration do you need in order to provide yourself that life? And what do you need to do to get that remuneration? And are you able to do what it needs to be done to get that? Or do we need to, so are we adjusting your output or are we adjusting the goal? Which one is it?
Yeah.
And I just feel that the sentiment around GCI at the moment is very debilitating.
Yeah. So look at what, rather than sort of going, all right, well, I see this agent's earning $1 million. What does my life look like? What do I want it to look like? And then solve it from
absolutely.
There.
I spent, do you know how much time, Sam, in the last, what have I been doing this now, 17 years? The amount of time I spend unpacking people's goals because they are not their goals. Mm. They were somebody else's goals on a stage. And they walked out of there thinking that that's what they needed to do to be successful.
Yeah.
Success is the achievement of something that you set for yourself,
yeah.
whether it be getting – because you want to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning just because your kids get up at 6 and you'd love that hour sitting on the couch. You know, what is that? And work towards that.
Okay, so we have talked about so much today and, you know, you and I could talk for hours.
Mm.
What I'd like you to do is just think about what is one thing that you would like everyone to remember from this whole chat that we've had this morning.
Mm. Of course, I would love them to remember to book their ARPM tickets.
Absolutely.
ARPMconference.com.au.
That's a given. Book your ARPM tickets.
Book your ARCN tickets. I would like people to remember that whilst much of what we talk about in regards to this choice factor, in regards to change, I would like people to remember that 2019 is really not that different to 2009, to 1999, to 1990, you know, in terms of change. We have always changed. It's called evolution. What we fear at the moment is the speed of it. And I think that to slow down change, to slow down evolution, that's not possible. But what is possible is to calm your mind so that whilst you're going through the speed of change, it doesn't feel as taxing. So things like that would include, you know, to calm your mind around how much tech you use, what you're putting into your brain, your, you know, how much social feed you watch. Like, just calm your mind, because change will continue to evolve at a pace that will continue to grow. And so the only thing that you can do is control what you can control, which is your own mind. And so don't be scared about change. Just try and slow the pace of how your brain works so that you can keep up with it.
Fiona Blaney, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.